Greetings, and thanks for listening to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia. Bubbling up in the Bear Soup hot tub for this program, the results of the 2009 Best of the Bears polls. A selection from the Masculine Mystique on Husbandry. Bears on Bears nominated for the Lammies. Shoutouts and the usual audio bear furbulosity. Someone's in the kitchen with Papa, cooking up a bubbling bowl of tangy, tasty bear soup. Welcome to Bear Soup, news, views, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community. This is your host, Ron Serratia, casting my pod to you through the mysterious tubes of the interweb from southeastern coastal Connecticut, USA. You're listening to episode number 63 of the Bear Soup podcast, streaming online at bearradio.net, Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Bear Soup is also available through our free iTunes subscription and download service. Access the Bear Soup archives through the Bear Soup tab on ronserratia.com. Bear Soup is sponsored by the Bookish Bears at Bare Bones Books. More news from Bare Bones later. First of all, New Year's greetings to everyone. So, we got the results for Best of the Bears 2009 from Gutfer, also known as CompleteBear.com, which sponsors the annual popularity poll for the bear community. Mike, who had said that he might come on the show to announce the winners, instead posted on January 1st the following message on his blog. First and foremost, I want to thank all of you who took the time to nominate these wonderful bears and came back to vote. Apparently, some of you got a little carried away with the voting.
What's going on here? Well, I don't stand there with your beak open. Say something. Explain yourself. Your tongue's flapping, but no noise is coming out of your big mouth.
Where we saw obvious voting irregularities, we attempted to correct the tabulation. Was the system perfect? Not even close, but we tried to control it the best we could. Understandably, this left a few of you frustrated. It was never our intent to create drama, and our apologies to any and all who felt slighted. We have a year to figure it out, and for those of you who are still unhappy, I'm sure we'll read about it on Facebook.
Yeah, that's a joke, son, don't you get it?
The spirit of the Best of the Bears has been to celebrate those in the community who go above and beyond. And this year I am proud to call many of the winners and nominees my friends. And the envelope for Best Actress goes to Bear of the Year, Jack Sugru of the Lazy Bear Fund. Best Bear Artist, Mr. Cub PDX, Brent Marr. Best Bear Bar, Diamond Jim's of Detroit. I remember going to their opening. Best Bear Podcast / Blog goes to Bears in the City. Congratulations, y'all.
Miserable little sluts.
Although it seemed very odd, speaking of voting irregularities, a phrase that just totally freaks me out ever since the 2000 election. So indeed, for this category in which Bear Soup was entered, the Best Bear podcast, there were definitely voting irregularities. And one of the nominees, Michael Carrera, just was taken out like 2 days beforehand without any explanation. In any case, I'm sure for other folks it was very frustrating. And just weird, you know. So my feeling is that if you want to produce something of value to the bear community, then isn't it worth like doing right instead of doing something really half-assed that doesn't really serve the bear community? In any case, going on, Best Bear Business goes to Woof Tees, whom we've spoken about. We met them in New York. Best Bear Campsite, Hillside Campgrounds. Best Bear Club goes to Northeast Ursa Men, the home team, go guys. And Best Bear Fundraiser goes to Joe Minetti, who's a great guy. Actually, really deserves to have gotten the Bear of the Year, in my opinion. So, Best Bear Performer goes to P.A. Cooley. Best Bear Porn Site, Pantheon Bear. Hot stuff they have there. Best Bear Porn Star goes to Patrick Montana. Best Bear Publication goes to Bear Magazine. Best Bear Resource, BearNation.us. Beat Bear Run. Oh, no, they misspelled it. Best Bear Run goes to Bears of Liberty Weekend. Best Bear Video goes to Woof Strapped. I haven't had the pleasure of seeing that. And Best Bear Website also goes to BearNation.us. Please join me in celebrating the Best of the Bears 2009.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 47 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2. The phone number toll free from anywhere. Mark in Daytona Beach, Florida is calling from surgery. Mark, are you about to have surgery or are you performing surgery?
All of the above.
Uh-huh.
You're performing surgery on yourself?
Exactly, sir. Hey, Stephanie.
That's kind of stupid, don't you think?
Not as long as you don't play that banjo music, it's not. But can you explain to Bill O'Reilly? There you go. Now you're cooking.
Okay.
This is for Stephanie Miller.
Yes, hello.
Bill O'Reilly. Why is the black community protesting at the white churches and not the black churches?
Because the black churches didn't fund Prop 8, yes, on Prop 8, like the Mormon church did.
Okay, according to all the news reports, it was the black vote that overturned that decision.
Right, now, but they did not fund
why
it.
Why aren't they going into the black community?
I just told you, because they didn't fund it. It was funded largely by out-of-state churches
you're
like the Mormon church.
And you would know that if you watched something
you're
besides Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity.
You always spin around it. Don't you ever give your real opinion on it?
Oh, I'm sorry, and what was that?
Your real opinion. Could just say it.
Well, I don't understand
why
what you're
you say that the homosexual community is afraid to go into a black neighborhood.
The
why
homosexual community?
It's not a homosexual community, sir.
You know what it is.
Mark, I just explained
just
it to you.
It.
They are upset because it was funded
it,
by the Mormon church.
You're
Mark, you won't listen.
It. You won't say it.
You're
you
not listening.
What? I'm sorry, Mark. What do you want to say? What do you think I'm not saying?
I think you're not saying that the gay community will not go into a black neighborhood and protest like they're doing in a white neighborhood.
Why? Why do you think that is?
It's the truth, and you know it is.
Why do you think that is if it's not because they didn't fund it?
Holy cow, you people are off the chain, man.
No, what
no, Mark, you're pretty stupid there, Mark.
Yeah, you're a real smart dude.
Mark, what? Oh, I guess he had to go into surgery now. Okay.
See, and the anesthesia kicked in.
Okay.
They're not protecting the people who voted for it. They're protesting the people who funded it.
I think he was wanting to say something really racist and then decided.
No, he did, but you were making fun of something he'd said. Out of state.
No, you were talking. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear him.
No,
anyway.
No, you talked over him saying that they're afraid of black people. That he said that.
That was the implication. Ron in Connecticut on gay marriage. Hi, Ron.
Hi, I was in New Haven and West Hartford yesterday observing the ceremonies, and I have to tell you, it was an amazing and joyous experience. for all of the couples who finally had their relationships validated by getting marriage licenses. Speaking for the homosex community, we may not be welcome in Ted Haggerty's church, but Ted Haggerty is welcome in our community.
All right. Thank you, Ron. I appreciate that. Yeah, what was that all about, the homosex? The homosexes.
You probably got that verbatim.
Seriously.
From O'Reilly.
Homosex community won't go in the black community because they're afraid.
They've been parroting that talking point the last couple of nights.
That guy's not a surgeon, seriously. Can you imagine you're about to go under and you hear that guy on the phone on a talk radio show? Eh, boy.
All my friends are gay. All my friends are gay.
Following is a selection from the book The Masculine Mystique, The Politics of Masculinity, written by Andrew Kimbrell, published in 1995 by Ballantine. In the chapter called Redefining Masculinity, there are two epigraphs. If technology is not to play a wholly destructive part in the future of Western civilization, we must now ask ourselves for the first time, what kind of society and what kind of man are we seeking to produce? From Lewis Mumford. And the second epigraph is, unless we change direction, we are likely to end up where we are headed. From a Chinese proverb. And the text begins. Men are now at a critical crossroad in understanding and dealing with their gender. As has been described over the last several chapters, many men are courageously struggling to lessen the suffering and heal the wounds that society and its masculine mystique have inflicted on so many boys and men. Their important work constitutes a new manifesto for the men's movement and masculinism. However, it is not only men who need healing and rehabilitating, but also masculinity itself. As men are being buffeted by a whirlwind of painful new employment realities, gender role reversals, family breakdowns, and demeaning public and media perceptions about maleness, they remain confused about the very nature of masculinity itself. The result is mass male vertigo. No one, it seems, knows what it means to be a man today. In the midst of this confusion, several divergent paths are being suggested to men as a solution to the crisis in the definition of masculinity. Many commentators are suggesting that one way for men to reclaim masculine identity is a staunch resistance to change. Men are urged to stay in the harness and continue to follow, by intent or inertia, the dictates of the masculine mystique. This means the continued glorification of productivity, competition, the profit motive, and technological power. It will mean the embracing of the hidden crisis as an inevitable cost of being a modern man, accepting the destruction of boys and men as the necessary transaction costs of doing business in our society. It will mean that men will continue to project their masculinity into machines, leaving precious little for themselves. It means that they will likely live lives of servility, in constant fear of losing employment and thereby being stripped of the only remaining badge of masculinity in our culture. It will mean that they will experience daring, adventure, power, sexuality, and the wilderness primarily as voyeurs sitting before flickering screens in the hours not consumed by work in the industrial and post-industrial workplace. Those advocating the reaffirmation of the masculine mystique see men working to change society's concept of the masculine as a collection of crybabies and wussies, reminiscent of the same type of ridicule tendered to the early environmentalists, tree huggers, and feminists, bra burners. Even veterans and non-custodial fathers who fight for their rights or complain of their treatment are viewed, in the best tradition of social Darwinism, as a bunch of losers, men who should stop whining and suck it up or move on. Some men argue for a very different way of dealing with the current crisis. They reject the masculine mystique by joining the rising chorus of those who view masculinity as essentially dysfunctional. These men advocate an implicit or explicit misandry. They share the sexist assumption that male genes, hormones, physiology, and psychology are responsible for war, environmental devastation, rape, physical abuse, and on and on. They advocate the mistaken notion that the masculine mystique is how men have always been and will always be. They view the oppressive and destructive elements of our current social system not as antithetical to real masculinity, but rather as the final collective expression of maleness and patriarchy. The destruction of fatherhood and the oppression of the vast majority of men under this system are generally ignored. Even the societal abuses that women take part in, whether in the realms of politics, business, spousal or child abuse, consumerism, or destruction of nature, are laid at the feet of masculinity. In fact, for many misandrists, maleness itself is viewed as an ontological evil. Since the 1970s, many men, especially in academia, have purveyed misandry. Men who follow the misandrist path are caught in a debilitating bind. They view themselves as oppressors, yet, like most men, experience victimization on the personal and societal level. Moreover, to the men who live under this ideological regime, their very masculinity is seen as an intrinsic negative, a physical and spiritual minus sign that must be expiated and purged. Paradoxically for them, being a man requires the destruction of masculinity. As was described in an earlier chapter, the chilling extreme conclusion of this approach is that men need to be subjected to mass behavior or genetic modification for the good of society. Some men reject both the masculine mystique and the misandrist paths by taking up the cudgels for what can be termed equal opportunity masculinism. This wing of masculinism is founded on the idea that traditional male-female roles have become dysfunctional in the last few decades due to modern economics and technology. The more enlightened thinkers in this camp see both men and women involved in a gender transition away from their biological mandates and into a new gender reality free of sexism, one that provides equal opportunity for all, regardless of gender. These men generally applaud the feminist movement for freeing women to become effective participants in the economic system. However, they now claim that the pendulum has swung too far in the feminist direction. They see men still stuck in their traditional chivalric roles in regards to women. This results in equal opportunity for women, but also in a continuation of the reality that men still do the dangerous jobs, bear the primary burden in breadwinning, die earlier of stress diseases, commit more suicide, and are killed in battle. These activists look for equal participation by men and women in the armed forces, in the workplace, in the home, and in the marketplace. They urge men to eschew outmoded chivalry and to change laws and practices so that the genders are on a truly equal playing field. While often eloquent in their attack on inequality and awarding custody to fathers and in their defense of men's health, these masculinists have few structural criticisms of our current economic system and offer men no real vision of what it means to be a man. Rather, they seem to be advocating that both genders become a new breed of androgynous competitors in the technological state. Further, while these equal opportunity masculinists often fight valiantly against injustice to men, their view can quickly degrade into a simple sibling rivalry between equal opportunity masculinists and equal opportunity feminists over who is getting the worst deal from the system. As men search for direction, it is increasingly apparent that none of the paths outlined above offer a sustainable future for masculinity. neither surrendering to the masculine mystique nor obeying the siren call of misandry will suffice to quell the current crisis in defining masculinity, nor will calls for equal opportunity masculinism. There is, however, yet another path, one that might be termed deep or transformative masculinism. Transformative masculinism calls for a gender revolution based on the rediscovery of masculinity as a primal, generative, and creative force. It involves an historic analysis of the masculine mystique and its decimation of older traditions of masculinity. It does not romanticize past cultures, but does attempt to preserve from them traditions that might contribute to a sustainable masculinity in the 21st century. It seeks to provide a variety of masculine ethics that both protect the masculine and enable men and society to find real-life solutions to the profound structural problems that have created the hidden crisis for men. The significant contribution of the mythopoetic wing of the men's movement to this deep masculine perspective is its understanding that every revolution has to be, in part, a revival, that the men's movement must face the current crisis of their gender with a call to reawaken lost images and ethics of masculinity. A men's movement cannot, by definition, be involved in the annihilation of the essence of masculinity that has been distilled over countless generations of men. It cannot fall into the view that all past cultural traditions of masculinity have been made obsolete by modernity, and ignore the hunger among men for a recovery of masculine meaning in their lives and work. A rediscovery of the traditional concepts of masculinity, and the discovery of a new, relevant masculinity for our times, must begin by rejecting the machine, competition, profit, and power men myths of the masculine mystique. Transformative masculinity advocates empathy over the masculine mystique's idolization of efficiency, cooperation, and community over the competition obsession, generativity and generosity over the profit motive, stewardship of life over technological exploitation, and replacing destructive power with nutrient power. As part of the recovery of masculinity, Robert Bly and others have also called for recognition and reaffirmation of the wild man, a call for modern men to come to terms with their sexuality and power and reject the cerebral, desiccated world of the efficient managers of modernity. Sam Keen has expounded the virtues of wonder, moral outrage, a heartful mind, and communion. Yet there is one ethic that stands out above all others as the key to the transformation of masculinity. It goes farther than other masculine traditions in repairing the Procrustean amputation of the masculine that took place during the Industrial Age. It is also an antidote to the infantilism and sibling bickering that have become more frequent in current gender confrontations. Moreover, it also retains the best of the hard-won masculinity of prior ages, and yet creates the basis for a masculinist political platform for this century. It stands as a central concept leading to the reconnection of men to each other, to family, community, and the earth. It is the ethic of husbandry. Husbandry. The word husbandry is derived from a combination of the Old English husbonda, bonded to home, and the Old Norse word bua, to dwell. The husband was a term originally used to distinguish the household's dweller from the nomad. Husbandry later came to be synonymous with the craft of farming. For the husbandman, the masculine was seen in terms of a deep relationship to spouse, children, community, and soil. Jungian psychologist and author Robert Manus has been among the most eloquent proponents of a reawakening of husbandry. Quoting Manus, "The essence of husbandry is a sense of masculine obligation, generating and maintaining stable relationships to one's immediate family and to the earth itself. At its heart, husbandry reflects a bonding to both family and nature through a clear appreciation of the responsibility inherent in the role of provider, caretaker, and steward. as men have increasingly been wrenched from their families and the earth upon which they worked, they have lost their appreciation for what it meant to live the role of the steward of the land and caretaker of our resources. Over the generations, there has been a considerable erosion in the sustaining identity of the role of husband. The gross reduction in the meaning of the word husband over the last several centuries, from a term signifying a rich group of masculine relationships to family, community, earth, and animals, to a pale term for one part of the diminished nuclear family, parallels the pauperization of the meaning of masculinity in the lives of modern men. Of course, it would be impractical, if not impossible, for most of us to return literally to the role of husbandmen to animals and the soil. However, the spirit of this relationship can be applied to men in contemporary life. In this renewed sense, drawn from its historical ancestry, husbandry implies the caring for others, one's family and community, as well as the larger biotic community with whom we share the natural world. Moreover, husbandry also suggests a sense of pride for men, a pride gained in the purposeful care of their own health and that of their families and friends, and in the stewardship of the earth's land and its limited resources. Husbandry reflects the ultimate expression of masculine generativity and power, and thus is an ethic around which a community of men can grow. It brings a renewed sense of purpose, relationship, and meaning that is lost to many men of today. As Sam Keen writes, "I know of no single honorific that defines a man so much as the verb to husband. A husbandman may or may not plow and sow crops, but he certainly must take care of the place with which he has been entrusted. To husband is to practice the art of stewardship, to oversee, to make judicious use of things, and to conserve for the future." The image is as central to gay men, bachelors, and widowers living in high-rise apartments as it is to married or landed householders. Psychologically, the husbandman is a man who has made a decision to be in place, to make commitments, to forge bonds, to put down roots, to translate the feeling of empathy and compassion into an action of caring. To actively husband, without domination or exploitation, can reawaken the male spirit from defeat and isolation. A renaissance and revolution of husbandry will help heal the woundedness of body and spirit men now suffer. A masculinist revolution, one based in husbandry, will need to be in part a quiet one as men listen to one another and to their bodies and study the meaning of masculinity in other cultures and times. But it must also be a noisy one, for such a social movement will require a near-constant confrontation with current economic and social structures. It will oppose the defective view of masculinity espoused by the masculine mystique and will fight the growing trend toward misandry. It will struggle to recover fatherhood, real work, male community, and stewardship. This deep masculinist revolution has already begun. In the last sections, we witnessed its vanguard in action. Men who are risking their success in the workplace to become teaching and nurturing fathers, men who are struggling to mentor young men in inner-city schools, men who gather in the wilderness to recapture a deeper understanding of themselves and of the wilderness itself, men who struggle, often for years, against a court system to retain a relationship with their children, men who fight for veterans and for the homeless, men who struggle against the powerful forces destroying the natural environment, men working to reduce the number of hours in the workplace, men providing holistic health for men. However, for the work of deep or transformative masculinism to succeed, it will have to be supported by many more communities of men. A beginning has been made, but far more remains to be done. The task of community building, therefore, is the most important and in many ways the most difficult hurdle men face in addressing the masculine mystique. And that was from The Masculine Mystique, The Politics of Masculinity by Andrew Kimbrough. Shout outs to the Mermen, OrlaMusic.com, all our new friends on Facebook, Joe of BearRadio.net. You've been listening to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 63. Check out the Bear Soup page on my homely little home blog, www.ronserratia.com, spelled RONSURESHA. Bear Soup with Ron Serratia is news, schmooze, skews, and interviews for the bear community. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bear Bones Books. Please check out their fine titles by bear authors at barebonesbooks.com. That's spelled BEARBONESBOOKS. Look for Bear Soup also on Facebook, and please feel free to contact me at bearsoup@gmail.com. That's it. Thanks so much for listening to Bear Soup.